It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Veteran reporter James Kumarasamy has been a BBC correspondent in Moscow, Warsaw, Paris, and Washington. Some of the stories he has covered are President Obama's 2008 election, Russian opposition to Vladimir Putin, and much more. He's in Pittsburgh for the Public Radio Program Directors Conference, and he was just having his picture taken with Megan Klingenberg, and now is sitting down at our guest position across the table from me, James Kumarasamy. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks very much.
I'm going to have you pull that mic just a little closer.
A little bit closer?
Yeah,
is that good?
You're a little taller than Megan.
Yeah, a little bit taller. Not quite as good at soccer as her. Ah, there we go.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes, you may not have the opportunity to head one off the line, but you can help us parse through the, you know, very tall weeds, policy weeds that the United States and Russia and Syria are working through right now. You're joining us.
Getting taller by the day.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Well, certainly after what's happened this morning, you're joining us on the heels of the news this morning that Russia has conducted its first airstrike in Syria. A U.S. official has said Russia is not targeting ISIS. So who are they targeting?
It's a good question. Certainly, according to Vladimir Putin, they do want to target ISIS. Russia says and is right to say they have their own threat from Islamic extremism. They've had plenty of experience of that. However, what's happening in Syria is more complicated than that, because the Russians have never disguised that they are supporters of President Assad. They have a military base in Syria. They are interested in keeping him in power. And as you say, from what we're hearing from American sources in particular, the targets today were not in ISIS areas. They were other members of the opposition. Now, interestingly, I was seeing that the British Foreign Secretary, who's been speaking at the UN today, has talked about Russia attacking both ISIS and Al-Qaeda-linked groups. Now, that is a pretty broad spectrum. So it brings in other groups who some would say are the opposition. They also could be labelled Al-Qaeda affiliates. So already you're getting a sense that the West is taking into account what is happening on the ground, which is not simply Russia attacking ISIS, but attacking other targets, opposition targets.
There has been so much tension in the last year or so in the relationship between the United States and Russia, for obvious reasons, because of the Russian aggression. And certainly you can get into semantics about, you know, whether Russia's behind what happened with Crimea, the annexation, and also, you know, what's been happening in eastern Ukraine. But it would seem to be obvious to anyone paying attention that Putin is behind some, if not all, of this. And that's created a real bifurcation between the United States and Russia that didn't exist before, certainly, 2014. So there's this question of the famous saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Is this the thing that, oddly enough, could bring Putin and Obama, the U.S. and Russia together, the idea that, you know, clearly Russia has no more interest in seeing ISIS have their way around the world than we are. And if they're protecting Assad, then clearly they have to do something about ISIS. So could this end up being the thing that brings us, ironically, together?
Ironic it would be. I think quite optimistic, to be perfectly honest, at this point, given what we've seen today, given the fact that Russia already seems to be broadening what it's doing in Syria. I think you also have to look at this in the context of what's happening in Russia and what has happened since Crimea. And by the way, I was in Crimea at the time of the annexation. I was there for that vote. There's no doubt what Russia did.
Yeah, vote in quotes.
You know, the green men who appeared a couple of weeks beforehand, who subsequently Vladimir Putin admitted in interviews, yes, they were Russian troops. Maybe they were there already. Maybe they weren't sent in. But, you know, that was something which the West continues to condemn, and sanctions have been put in place and sanctions have been ramped up. But Russia has absolutely no intention of changing its mind on Crimea. That is now, as far as Russia is concerned, de facto part of Russia, even though that's not recognized. I think what we're seeing in eastern Ukraine, interestingly, is that Russia has got a bit bogged down there. The war there has really not going anywhere. It's still the numbers of incidents, the number of deaths is down, but it's still, there's no sense of stability there, and there's no sense of what's going to happen in the long term. This chunk of what is normally still Ukraine, but which are now self-declared republics. They are due to have elections in the next couple of months. The goalposts for those are being moved. It's not the place that one would imagine the Russian authorities would have wanted to be with that. They are clearly looking at ways of getting back into the international community. The sanctions are starting to hurt. Many people would look at what's happening in Syria now and say, yes, of course, Russia has been an ally of Syria, but this is an opportunity. Precisely the question you've posed to me, is this a way of Russia somehow getting back into the fold? And it has done. President Putin had not spoken at the UN General Assembly for 10 years before his speech the other day. You know, this is Russia, which has been kicked out of the G8, which has been ostracized by large parts of the Western world, finding an issue that perhaps he can get back into. Whether it's something that brings the America or the West more broadly back together with Russia, I think, though, that is remains to be seen. And I think, you know, how this bombing, these initial few days, and whether the coordination is there will be absolutely key.
How dangerous is this situation? I mean, you've got the Russians going in and bombing. We're doing our own bombing of ISIS.
That's not going to stop. That's not.
Clearly, it's not. So you've got these two superpowers that are, you know, using some pretty heavy machinery in that part of, in that very volatile part of the world. That, how long can that go on?
I think you've answered the question, haven't you? I mean, it is, of course, it's potentially dangerous. That's certainly what people are worried about. Look, I don't, you know, Russia doesn't want a war with the West over this. I mean, I think Russia wants to reassert its position in the world, but there are militaries, they are bombing, and there is always the potential for something to go wrong. And, you know, the two militaries have not been talking for some time. So I think, you know, there is real concern. But I think if part of the reason this is happening is because President Putin wants to come back into the fold to a certain extent, then everything will be done to avoid unpleasant accidents. But these are concerning times.
So what's it going to take, do you think, just based on your experience of covering both of these men, for President Obama and President Putin to align their respective visions on Syria?
I don't think they will align their respective visions. I don't think they will. I think it will be accommodating.
That might have been
now.
The word that I probably should have used.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be any aligning. I think it is, in the first instance, avoiding some terrible accident, some unfortunate incident with the bombing raids. And I think it just gives America, Britain, the rest of the Western world an extra headache all through the last year and a half since the annexation of Crimea and what's happened in eastern Ukraine. The Russian position has been to perhaps muddy the waters. You know, we've seen all these humanitarian convoys coming into eastern Ukraine, 40, I think, now Russian convoys, which no one has really been able to check what's inside them. Lots of suspicions that they might have been helping the pro-Russian rebels there. Recently, the pro-Russian rebels in eastern Ukraine kicked out UN humanitarian organizations from eastern Ukraine. So even though there's not the full-scale war that we saw several months ago, there is still a muddying of the waters. No one quite knows what's happening there. And I think this just adds an extra layer, and it makes negotiations over other issues even more complicated.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest is BBC correspondent James Kamara-Sami. Joining us on the program, he is in Pittsburgh for the Public Radio Program Directors Conference and was with us in studio. Very fortuitous, considering what has happened in the world today and his ability to talk about all of that. I do want to get into some of your background and also talk about the BBC NewsHour, which we carry here on 90.5 WESA at 9 o'clock every morning. That is a service that I know a lot of people who listen to our station appreciate. In this age of loud voices and argumentative radio and television, how important is it to have this oasis of sanity in our world?
I think it's very important. I would say that. You'd be very, very surprised if I didn't.
No,
yes, look,
I mean,
I've been one of the hosts of NewsHour for the last 5 years. I mean, before that, I was out in the field, and I still as we've indicated during this conversation, still go out and report from the field and host programs from the field. And I think that's what we try to bring. All of us who host the programs, all of the hosts that you'll hear, if you listen to us on WESA, have been correspondents and continue to go out to countries to keep the reporting at the center of it. So, yes, there are opinions expressed during the program, but we try to base things very much on our factual reporting and on talking to the people, I mean, ordinary people, what a horrible expression, but the people, the citizens of the countries that we meet and how they are affected. My colleague Lise Doucette, who is over here for the public radio conference as well, she's at the United Nations General Assembly doing some reporting there. She spent a lot of time in Syria, has reported a lot on not just on the geopolitics that we've been talking about, but very much on the human costs and how that has had an impact on a generation. Of course, the numbers are staggering, 11 million people on the move, and we're seeing in Europe at the moment quite how many people are now coming to Europe and creating a whole new raft of problems for policymakers, a whole new response, a humanitarian response from ordinary folks around the continent who don't quite understand why borders are going back up again, why people aren't responding. Some countries are responding more generously than others, but why people are not responding to this kind of humanitarian disaster in the way that they might like.
You have, as you mentioned, had a chance to see things firsthand in places like Crimea. How does that change you as a journalist when you have a chance to see a situation like that was devastating for so many people?
It helps you as a journalist. It just informs when you're in a studio. I mean, I spend most of my time in a studio like this one, and your knowledge and your feeling for the stories that you're reporting on are only helped by going out there, and you can draw on your experience. I mean, you know, the world moves quickly. You know, Crimea was more than a year ago. Here we are, Russia bombing in Syria. Things have moved quite a long way. But it helps because you have your contacts on the ground you can speak to, you can go back to, and that's what we like to do again, revisit stories, revisit the people that we've spoken to. But it also means that when you are talking to policymakers, you have concrete examples, you have your own eyewitness memories and reports that you can draw on to ask perhaps some of the questions that in those policy debates don't always come out.
We're getting dangerously low on time, but I wanted to go back to Putin because you have one of the things that you have covered are the opposition to him in Russia. It's not just around the world or here in the United States, but in Russia as well. There are people who are very opposed to what he's doing. How dangerous of a man is he? I mean, one of the biggest threat to him in terms of opposition, in the belief of many, he assassinated or was involved in assassinating. And you know, there's limited proof there, but I mean, people are going to think what they think, and they think he had something to do with it. So what's going to happen with him? How long can he stay in power? He's done so for a long time.
He's a very popular leader. I mean, we take some of these opinion polls from Russia with a pinch of salt, but anecdotally, traveling around Russia, he is still a popular leader. And the state media, certainly his very unquestioning of him, and that's really been ramped up in the last year since events in Ukraine and Crimea. I think, you know, you've got to look at in the bigger context of what came before him. Boris Yeltsin, who was somebody who, again, was pretty popular in the West, but was seen by many Russians not to have given them the kind of economic stability they wanted. So, you know, there is a limited opposition, but it's not very strong, it's not very powerful, and at the moment I don't see anyone unseating him.
So Putin's not going anywhere.
Doesn't look like it.
So much more we could talk about, but I'm glad we've had the chance to discuss what we have discussed. James Kumaraswamy, BBC correspondent. You hear him on NewsHour, and we're so honored to have him in Pittsburgh and in our studios at 90.5 WSA.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, sir. And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, back tomorrow with another edition of the program. Until then, so long for now.
I'm Larkin Page.